Welcome to Nightlights. I'm David Brent Johnson. In 1970, trumpeter Miles Davis released a landmark album, Bitches Brew, that melded jazz, rock, and other elements into a sound that came to be known as fusion. But even before Bitches Brew, fusion was beginning to churn, with young jazz musicians such as Gary Burton, Larry Coryell, and Steve Marcus incorporating the influence of rock music into the recordings they were making. We'll hear those artists and others in the next hour as we explore the fusion pioneers of the late 1960s. It's First Fusion, jazz rock before Bitches Brew, coming up on this edition of Nightlights. Saxophonist Steve Marcus and the group Counts Rock Band performing The Byrds' 8 Miles High, a rock song inspired in part by John Coltrane's A Love Supreme, with Mike Nock on piano, Larry Coryell on guitar, Chris Hells on bass, Bob Moses on drums, and Gary Burton on tambourine, from the 1968 album Tomorrow Never Knows. In June of 1967, the same month that the Beatles released Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, Downbeat magazine published A Message to Our Readers. Rock and roll has come of age, the flagship journal of the jazz world proclaimed. Without reducing its coverage of jazz, Downbeat will expand its editorial perspective to include musically valid aspects of the rock scene. Rock was on the rise, and jazz was on the run. That same year, two legendary New York City jazz clubs, the Five Spot and Eddie Condon's, both closed, and a Downbeat cover headline stated, "Jazz as we know it is dead." Long considered to be the hip music of the counterculture, jazz now seemed either bop, stagnant, or avant-garde abrasive to young listeners who flocked to rock instead. In his book Jazz Rock, Stuart Nicholson chronicles the economic migrations and upheavals caused by jazz's declining popularity and the growing calls of some jazz writers and mainstream media music critics for jazz to somehow find a way to align itself with rock music. Some young jazz musicians were feeling much the same way. Older, established jazz artists generally loathed the Beatles and the rock groups that proved successful in their wake because those groups' popularity helped crush the market for jazz and because rock was an alien and seemingly crude music to many jazz artists. But jazz groups with younger players, led by saxophonist Charles Lloyd and John Handy, were finding favor with youthful audiences, in part because of their colorful attire and vibrant music that alluded to the emerging psychedelic sound of rock. One of the first jazz rock groups to emerge in the mid-1960s was the Free Spirits, which grew out of a music collective that jammed in a New York City club called L'Intrigue. Young musicians such as guitarist Larry Coryell, saxophonist Jim Pepper, trumpeter Randy Brecker, and drummer Bob Moses all partook of a kinetic and experimental culture that had room for both Wes Montgomery and the Rolling Stones. Looking back decades later, Coryell, who had come to New York City from Seattle in 1965 at the age of 22, said the Free Spirit sound was a result of trying to imagine what it would be like if John Coltrane met George Harrison. The Free Spirits opened for Jimi Hendrix, The Doors, and the Velvet Underground, and recorded their debut album in late 1966 for ABC, with a repertoire written primarily by Coryell and fellow guitarist Chip Baker. From Out of Sight and Out of Sound, here are the Free Spirits and Don't Look Now on Nightlights.
Rocks on Staten Island, a story unbelievable. That the stars could be lying to me, it's simply inconceivable.
Don't look now, try and turn around. The trap boy in me, do not make a sound. The Air Pollution Committee hung up on the ground.
Oh,
don't look now, but your head is turned around.
Oh, hear the cry of bottle caps, ineffective on the island shore.
Fester in the ground. With bottle boards and battleships to guide you by the pound.
Oh!
Don't look now, but your head is turned around.
Mm-hmm.
The Free Spirits with I'm Gonna Be Free and Don't Look Now from their 1967 LP Out of Sight and Out of Sound, featuring Larry Coryell on sitar, guitar, and vocals, Jim Pepper on saxophone and flute, Chip Baker on guitar, Chris Hills on bass guitar, and Bob Moses on drums. Despite laudatory liner notes from jazz critic Nat Hentoff and an ABC ad touting the Free Spirits as the now group with the now sound, Out of Sight and Out of Sound failed to make any kind of impact with either jazz or rock audiences, and the band themselves were dissatisfied with the record, feeling that it didn't capture the expansive energy found in their live performances. Not long after its release, Larry Coryell and Bob Moses left the Free Spirits to join Gary Burton's new quartet. Burton, who just quit Stan Getz's group, was a young but already experienced 24-year-old jazz artist who had forged an innovative four-mallet technique for playing vibes, and he was looking to create a new sound that would somehow incorporate the music that he loved in addition to jazz. On his previous two LPs, he'd included songs by the Beatles and Bob Dylan. "I'm young and I like being young," he said in the liner notes to the quartet's 1967 album Duster. "I feel like having long hair. I enjoy rock music and feel it has an extremely important role in the future of music. It's alive and timely, but I'm not trying to prove anything with my music or the group. I'm only concerned that we play what we are." Though the Burton Quartet's recordings don't sound provocative today, some more traditionally inclined jazz audiences didn't know what to make of Coryell's occasionally distorted guitar or the group's often free-form approach, propelled by Burton's dynamic vibes playing and the near-telepathic rapport of his bandmates. From the album Duster, here's Gary Burton and 1-2-1-2-3-4 on Nightlights. Thank you. Vibraphonist Gary Burton and 1-2-1-2-3-4 from his 1967 album Duster, with Larry Coryell on guitar, Steve Swallow on bass, and Roy Haynes on drums. Burton's quartet would continue to the end of the decade, with some personnel changes that included Jerry Hahn replacing Coryell on guitar. Hahn had been a member of saxophonist John Handy's unusually configured quintet that had developed a strong following with young rock audiences on the West Coast. In 1968, two key members of that quintet, pianist Michael Nock and violinist Michael White, left Handy to start the Fourth Way, named after George Gurdjieff's philosophy for awakening consciousness. Jazz fusion historian Kevin Falaise describes Fourth Way's sound as a proto-world fusion blend of jazz, Asian, and African traditions, rock and funk, and acoustic and electronic instrumentation that suggested the far-reaching possibilities of fusion. Here's the Fourth Way and Gemini Trajectory on Nightlights. We'll be right back. The Fourth Way and Gemini Trajectory from their 1967 eponymous debut album, with Mike Nock on keyboards, Ron McClure on bass, Eddie Marshall on drums, and Michael White on violin. I'll have more music from late 1960s fusion pioneers in just a few moments. You can hear many previous Nightlights programs, including shows about the mid-1960s group of Charles Lloyd and John Handy, on our website at indianapublicmedia.org/nightlights. Production support for Nightlights comes from Landlocked Music CDs and Vinyl, located at 202 North Walnut in Bloomington, or online at landlockedmusic.com. And from the Laughing Planet Cafe at the corner of Kirkwood and Grant in Bloomington. Carry out and delivery information at 812-323-2233. I'm David Brent Johnson, and you're listening to First Fusion, Jazz Rock Before Bitches Brew, on Nightlights. I'm featuring early jazz rock recordings in this edition of Nightlights by artists who've sometimes been referred to as fusioneers, young musicians who in the heady days of the late 1960s attempted to merge their love of modern-day rock with jazz. Saxophonist Jim Sangre has noted that the psychedelic era was the beginning of the incorporation of real improvisation into post-swing popular music. So opportunities for common ground, or possible pursuit of possibly discoverable areas of common ground, suddenly existed where none had really been before. Groups like Cream and the Grateful Dead often incorporated long improvisatory jams into their song structures. There was another convergence of jazz and rock as well in the sound of groups such as Blood, Sweat, and Tears and Chicago, which came to be known as big band rock, often blending brass riffs with rock rhythms. The first edition of Blood, Sweat, and Tears included pianist Al Cooper and trumpeter Randy Brecker, who would go on to fame with brother Michael in the 1970s, and the group's second album would spawn a huge hit that featured a solo by trumpeter Lou Soloff. These groups in turn had been influenced by the sound of trumpeter Don Ellis's big band, which used a variety of odd time signatures and blended a variety of musical influences into a brew of proto-fusion jazz. We'll hear both Blood, Sweat, and Tears and Don Ellis in this next set, kicking off with a song that charted big in 1969, Spinning Wheel on Nightlights.
What goes up must come down. Spinning wheel, got to go. Pony, let the spinning wheel spin. You got no money and you got no home. Spinning wheel all alone. Talking about your troubles and you never learn. Ride a painted pony, let the spinning wheel turn. Did you find the directing sign on the straight and show you the colors that are real. Spinning naked pony on the spinning wheel ride.
Oh,
trumpeter Don Ellis in the 45 version of Indian Lady from his 1967 album Electric Bath. Blood, Sweat, and Tears before that with Spinning Wheel from their eponymous 1968 LP. Two examples of early big band fusion of a sort. Saxophonist Steve Marcus had a big band heritage, playing with both Woody Herman and Stan Kenton, and he was also a part of the New York City scene that had spawned the Free Spirits. In the late 1960s, he put together an ensemble that in retrospect is a sort of supergroup of early jazz rock called Count's Rock Band, including former Free Spirits Larry Coryell on guitar, Chris Hills on bass, and Bob Moses on drums, as well as John Handy and Fourth Way pianist Mike Knock on keyboards. Gary Burton even shows up on tambourine. The group's sound has been described as the meeting of free jazz and acid rock. Mike Knock said, "Our idea was to play contemporary jazz over rock grooves." And on songs like The Byrds' 8 Miles High and The Beatles' Tomorrow Never Knows, the group succeeded in creating a dramatic early form of fusion. Saxophonist Steve Marcus and Count's Rock Band with Tomorrow Never Knows on Nightlights.
Thank you.
saxophonist Steve Marcus and Count's Rock Band performing the Beatles' Tomorrow Never Knows from their 1968 album of the same name, with Mike Nock on piano, Larry Coryell on guitar, Chris Hills on bass, and Bob Moses on drums. There are other musicians from the mid to late 1960s who delved into the realm of jazz rock, such as vibraphonist Dave Pike and Mike Maneri, pianist Warren Bernhardt, and flutist Jeremy Steig. But the musician who made the biggest noise, so to speak, before the fusion salvo of Miles Davis's Bitches Brew was Davis's young drummer, Tony Williams. Davis had already begun to make the musical moves that would ultimately lead to Bitches Brew, but in the meantime, Williams had formed what some call the first power trio, Lifetime, with jazz organist Larry Young and British guitarist John McLaughlin. My idea was to create my own audience where I didn't have to compete with any musician's concept, not let rock, not let jazz, or any other form dictate my musical development, said Williams. All three members of the group had jammed with Jimi Hendrix, and their loud guitar and organ-drenched sound, powered by Williams' intense drumming that continued to draw heavily on his own jazz rhythms as well as rock rhythms, reflected the cultural, political, and musical intensity of the times. Williams said that he called their debut album Emergency because it was an emergency for me to leave Miles and put that band together. In 1969, jazz itself seemed to be in a state of emergency. Some of the featured acts at the Newport Jazz Festival that year included Jethro Tull, Sly and the Family Stone, and Led Zeppelin. Miles Davis was turning his ear more and more to these sounds, and in the next few years, he, Weather Report, Return to Forever, and the Mahavishnu Orchestra, led by Lifetime's guitarist John McLaughlin, would take jazz, artistically and commercially, through perhaps its last great sea change. The age of fusion was about to dawn. Tony Williams' Lifetime and Emergency on Nightlights. Thank you. I close with Tony Williams' Lifetime performing the title track from the 1969 album Emergency. Thanks for tuning in this edition of Nightlights. You can listen to many previous Nightlights programs on our website at indianapublicmedia.org/nightlights. Production support for Nightlights comes from Landlocked Music CDs and Vinyl, located at 202 North Walnut in Bloomington or online at landlockedmusic.com, and from the Laughing Planet Cafe at the corner of Kirkwood and Grant in Bloomington, Indiana. Carry out and delivery information at 812-323-2233. Nightlights is a production of WFIU and part of the educational mission of Indiana University. I'm David Brent Johnson, wishing you good listening for the week ahead.